Hey, today we interview one of our favorite guests, Jason Moore, who has written his 14th book, AI in the Church, A Clear Guide for the Curious and Courageous. So stay tuned as we try to stump him with our questions next on the Church Solutions Podcast.
It's the Church Solutions Podcast, brought to you by StreamingChurch.tv. The Church Solutions Podcast is all about helping you and your church with technology and other resources for your life and ministry. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Lacy and Phil Thompson.
It's another episode of the Church Solutions Podcast. My name is Phil Thompson.
And I'm Steve Lacy.
Steve Lacy, how are you today in this Tucson weather?
Doing awesome. Yeah.
A lot of our friends on the East Coast are getting hit in Midwest.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of weird because if I travel somewhere, well, Jason, our guest coming up here.
Yeah, don't tell anybody who
he
is.
But if you don't travel, you're like, wow, this is awesome. And then you go somewhere and you're like, oh my gosh, this is what the rest of the world is experiencing. So
I understand.
Or vice versa in the summer.
All right. Well, this is episode number 461. And speaking of bad weather, our guest is from my home state of Ohio. And he's a fellow Buckeye. He's a graduate of the Modern College of Design. And he's author of, count them, 13 books. He's a frequent keynote speaker. And he's a sought after trainer. His latest book is called AI and the Church, A Clear Guide for the Curious and Convinced, and it's available wherever books are sold. Please welcome Mr. Jason Moore to the Church Solutions Podcast. Jason, how are you?
Hey, it is good to be back with you. Two minor corrections. I need to update my bio, apparently. Yeah. This is actually book number 14. Ooh. So it was 13 prior to this, and I must have put it out wrong somewhere. And the title of the book isn't The Curious and Convinced, but The Curious and Courageous.
Okay.
I think you have to be a little bit courageous in this moment to take a look at AI and maybe even accept it into your world and embrace the tools.
Yeah, well, this probably was not my mistake. It was an AI mistake, probably. So well, I apologize for that.
ChatGPT is known to get things wrong every now and then, make some things up along.
I wondered about that title for The Curious and Convinced, but I thought, well, okay, so you're convinced and you're going to get a clear guide. I don't know. But and by the way, have you done the audio version of this book?
I have not yet anyway. That's something I've been thinking about. There is a really incredible AI tool that I use quite regularly called 11 Labs that will let you do, and Phil, I've always been so impressed with your radio voice. You've got such a great voice for voiceover work.
I make lots of money on it. I'm just rolling in the dough.
Right.
But thank you. Thank you very much.
So no offense to you or any other voiceover artist out there, but 11 Labs does a really good job of creating human sounding artificial voices. And one of the things that you can do with that technology, which I have done, is do a professional voice clone. So you give it 3 hours of audio and then you can type things out or copy and paste into it. And then it will learn sort of your cadence and the way you sound and all that. So my thought is that one of these days I'm going to take the contents of the book, throw it into 11 Labs and create an audio version of the book rather than me having to spend all the time, because it's a 260 page book. It's going to be quite the endeavor to read it
That sounds like a great idea. We're very familiar with 11 Labs. We have one of our tools is integrated with 11 Labs. So
yeah, it's great.
We are actively allowing pastors and others to clone their voice to feed into devotionals.
Yeah. I love it for that. I had a project a while back where I didn't have time to hire a voiceover and the client didn't have the budget really for me to hire a professional voiceover. So this was before 11 Labs could clone a voice, but I had my wife do the voiceover. And the client called and said, hey, we want to change like 3 lines in this. It's, you all might be better at audio than I am, but I find it's really hard to match the same quality and sound and EQ and all that. I'm just not that much of an audio guy. I'm more of a visual guy. So, and my wife was finishing up a program. She was getting her teaching license. So she was in college and it was going to be really hard for me to get her in the studio, try and set everything up and all that. But 11 Labs have come out with the voice clone feature. So I just took the old audio from the previous year, cloned her voice, typed in the extra things that I needed her to say, the 2 or 3 lines. It was a spot on match for the tone and quality because I had cloned that other audio, and didn't even have to bother her to do that work for me. And turned out great, and the client was very happy. So it's an amazing time in production in the church and so on and so forth.
Well, let me just pay her for that work, right?
Yeah, of course, big bucks.
Well, let me just do a shameless plug. Steve mentioned that, we have a tool that uses it. Just for everybody's information, it's dailydive365.com. So check it out. So that's today's sponsor. So Jason, what sparked your initial interest in exploring this book, the intersection of AI and the church? Was there some kind of an aha moment that really sparked it, or was it just kind of a gradual, realization?
Yeah. Well, I have been in ministry for about 27 years now, and my bent has always been toward technology and creativity and that sort of thing. Back when I first got my start in ministry for maybe 20 years, I was just going around trying to convince churches that it was okay to put screens in the sanctuary because I thought that was a great way for us to connect with a visual culture and that sort of thing. I guess it was August of 2022. You probably are familiar with DALL-E, which is the image generator that is built into ChatGPT. That used to be a standalone app before it was integrated into ChatGPT. And in August of 22, they put out a new version of it, DALL-E 2. And it had this new feature that would allow you to take a photo and upload it. And then you could kind of take a box next to it and describe what you wanted to see prompt. And it would sort of match the art style and just continue that art. So I uploaded this little picture of Mona Lisa, just the center part of it. And then I spent 45 minutes playing and expanded way outside the frame and ended up with like this enormous picture. And she was just in the center of it. And in that moment, my heart started to beat a little bit faster. I started to sweat a little because I thought nobody's going to need me anymore. Like, I'm a graphic artist. That's what I do. But, the more I reflected on that moment, the more I thought, this is going to be a really great thing for the church because not everyone can hire somebody like me. That we don't all have budgets or graphic designers or communicators on our staff. And so I love the thought that somebody could learn to talk to these image generators. You do have to sort of learn how to talk to them in a way that you get good results. But I thought, gosh, maybe what I can do is be a bridge builder here to help the people who don't know anything about this technology learn how to use it. And also, I think, how not to use it. There are lines I think we really shouldn't cross. And so it sort of, in a way, it was gradual, but it was definitely along the same lines of my personal passion for using whatever means possible to communicate the gospel in as effective a way as possible. So I guess I started to think of myself as a little bit of a guide on this journey to AI. I'm going to learn it and then I'm going to teach it so that other people can come along, not have to run away from it.
So one of the things, this was August of 2022, which in certain perspective is not that long ago, but things have really changed and improved since then. I'm surprised you were amazed back then, because I know some of my early dabs into things and some of the stuff you see on the media of these distorted image stuff was just terrible.
Yeah.
But it was starting to get good then. And now it's, how would you describe it? How have we progressed in the past, 24 months or so?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair assessment of where we were at that time. It was mainly mind-blowing to me that I could just use words to describe what I wanted and it would actually create something. The early days of image generation kind of reminded me of that style of art that maybe was popular in the early 80s. I don't know.
Where people take out like,
what's that?
Art, or what did they call it? Avant-garde?
Yeah, maybe so, but
seven fingers or eight fingers or whatever.
You did get a lot of that. No, I was thinking about, how people used to take magazines and cut different pieces of the magazines out and put it all together and kind of make a new image from a bunch of other images. And that's kind of what it felt like in the early days. Like, people didn't look very realistic. And I did some experiments in the early days. One of them, and actually I think these are in the book, there's one of Jesus skydiving over New York City. And it was a really terrible looking image. And then maybe 6 months ago, I prompted that same image. And now it's so close to photo real. It's really hard to sometimes determine whether it's real or it's not real. Now, some of those telltale factors are that you get sometimes too many fingers or skin looks a little like plasticky or whatever. But even that stuff, there are ways around it if you know how to talk to it. So it's gotten to the place where I haven't bought a stock photo in a long time. And I used to buy a lot of stock photos. In fact, I used to be subscribed to some stock photo houses where I paid like a big fee to have a blanket, you know, account or whatever with them where I could download stuff. But what's really amazing to me is that, and I'm sure you've experienced this in your business, if you're looking for a specific image, you know, you can spend half a day looking for that image in a stock photo library. And a lot of times you don't ever find it, but you find something that's sort of it, but you're compromising a lot. And then if you're somebody like me who like also knows Photoshop, you might spend, you know, half a day Photoshopping this piece and this piece to kind of try and make it all work. I mean, now you can go to these tools and describe exactly what you want. And it takes a little bit to get there still. But yeah. A lot of times you can get exactly what you're after, you know, and it can be really something weird and obscure. And you know, it has the ability to make it happen, which
you should do.
Again, I think in the church world is kind of cool because one stock photo costs $25, $35. I mean, it can be way more than that if you're doing like a high end photo.
Yeah, you should talk to Steve about canceling photo. Yeah, we don't have time on the podcast. It took forever to cancel it, didn't it? It was crazy.
I bet.
Aforementioned service we were with, I thought, we're not using this so much, and we've got some AI to be able to build some things, and we've been using them for like 10, 15 years. So we had a library of hundreds and hundreds of images. And I thought, oh, you know, we could just reuse some of these things from before. But anyway, yeah, it was it wasn't a matter of, I cancel. It was, you know, I thought that's what it was. Just go cancel my subscription. Next month, we're off the hook. And didn't realize, I guess I had signed up to some agreements I knew nothing about. So anyway, it was very painful.
So, yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, and I'll just say to finish that thought, Midjourney, if you buy the lowest plan, is only $7 a month. And you can generate, you know, I don't know what the number is, but you can generate a ton of images. It slows you down after you hit a certain point. But so for the fraction of the cost of one stock photo, you can have a monthly subscription that lets you kind of create anything.
Yeah. So there is a difference between, call it a hack like me getting the image that I want and a guy like you. So, because I've listened to, I think, some of your other podcasts or somewhere else where you were talking about tips for, I mean, you really got to learn how to speak the language.
Yeah.
And prompt it. Can you expand on that a little bit? What do you mean by, paint me a rose
right.
that is red? You know, that's probably not going to work the way I want it.
There is a huge difference between asking an image generator to create an image of a puppy and then getting very specific about, I want an impossibly cute puppy. It is a Labrador retriever, a golden retriever. It is shot in Central Park during the fall, lots of fall colors, midday. That's going to affect the shadows and the shading. Well lit, you know, shot on a DSLR camera with shallow depth of field. All of that stuff that you're giving it, all that context helps it understand better what you're after. And because it's trained on, you know, just a plethora of other images, it knows what depth of field is. It knows if I say I want it to be shot on a Polaroid camera, Instamatic, or if I say I want it to be shot on an iPhone, or I want it to be shot on film, I'm going to get three very different looks just by changing that. If I say it's at midday, it's going to look one way. If I say it's at midnight, it's going to look completely different. So I think a lot of people who haven't had a lot of success in prompting for images haven't really set the AI up for win because they haven't given enough information. There is a whole chapter in my book on prompting for image, and I give you a whole framework. But generally speaking, you have to help it understand the media that you want to work in. Because if I say I want an image of a puppy, it might create a cartoon, it might create a painting, it might. But if I say I want a photo of a puppy, now I've given it a little bit more context. And then if I tell it what action I want that thing. So it's sort of what's the medium, what's the subject in your image, what is the setting, what time of day is it, you know, all of those things. And then there are other descriptors that we can bring in, and that's going to take your very average looking image to something that looks like a professional quality kind of image.
You can start where you're at and iterate, meaning it gave me something, it's not quite right now. I need, you know, make this sure this looks like it was taken on a DSLR or photorealistic or.
Yep. And the other thing is with some of these tools, you now can create style references or even character references. So if I want the picture to be of you, I can give it a picture of you and say, I want to use this character reference. I can give it a picture of Central Park, and then it will render you in Central Park. Now, the likeness varies a little bit, but the tools are getting better and better. There's also this new process, relatively new process, called a low-ranking adaptation. And basically, you give it 20 photos of yourself or an object or your logo or whatever the thing might be, and it learns the likeness of that thing. And then you can prompt yourself in any style, any format. So I know we're friends on Facebook. You might have seen this, but like I turned myself into a Muppet. I turned myself into Alfred style like Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine, a comic book character, you know, all of that. And it now knows what I look like and can render me in different ways.
So in your book, you discuss all these various applications for AI and the church. Which do you see as really having the most transformative potential for the church, and why?
Well, that's a great question. It's hard to narrow it down to just one because there are so many. I just had a call yesterday with an organization called Mission Insight. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they basically do statistical data and help churches sort of look at their area and know all the demographics and how long people have lived there and, you know, economic factors and all that kind of stuff. And then they kind of help churches learn how to connect with those people. Yesterday in our call, we pulled some of that data in and used ChatGPT to chat with the data, which is kind of a wild thing, and asking it, like, what trends do you see? When might we host this event? Like, it can help us figure out what's going on in the world of those people, that kind of thing. So you can use it for statistical analysis, which is pretty cool. One of my favorite ways to use it is to do brainstorming for series. So if you're trying to create a series on a certain topic and you want to bring some creativity to that, to have a really powerful, meaningful metaphor or some other creative way, pathway into that, it'll help you do that. I love it for image generation and video generation. So I know you said what one thing, but it's hard to limit it to one because there are the tools kind of work together in a way that there's sort of a multifaceted approach to any kind of creative problem that you might have. And the other thing is it will allow you to do things that you couldn't otherwise do. Like, again, I know we're friends on Facebook. You might have seen this the other day, but as I was watching the Super Bowl, I was thinking back to when I was in high school, the Bud Bowl was a big thing. You know, they had these for 8 years, Budweiser versus Bud Light or whatever, and the bottles were animated and they move around the field and all that. And I thought, gosh, I really missed those commercials from when I was a kid. And so I went into an AI generator. I used Flux and generated an image. And I was like, of the coin toss, I'm like, here's what it would look like if Bud Bowl 9 happened this year. And I thought, you know what? I've got another tool that I could make that move. So I took it into there and I ended up spending about 8 hours moving around. But I created this little 13-second Bud Bowl coin toss that pretty much legitimately looks like it could have been the 9th episode. And I would have never had the time or even the skill set to stop motion animate or even 3D animate those things moving around. So I know that's a silly example, but for churches, it means that you can tell biblical stories in new and exciting ways. You can take that voiceover software we talked about and have really powerful scripture readings where you generate images that go along with it and so on. So I just think it gives us an opportunity to tell our story in really compelling ways now without having to go be a master of Photoshop and all that stuff.
Yeah. And I enjoy your Facebook stuff. I love your transparency. If people listening, you don't follow Jason Moore on Facebook, you're missing something. So follow him on Facebook. But you don't think they should use the Bud bottles. Churches should probably shouldn't use the
probably
bottles,
not.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
Maybe maybe grape juice, bottles okay. or something like that.
So, I mean, there's been great advances in the image world. What's going on? You talked about bringing this thing into a video tool, and what do you see on the horizon? Video wise, because it was, I mean, we're at the very beginning of video AI.
Yeah, absolutely. Last year, I attempted some things with video, and you could do a little bit, but it really wasn't very convincing. And it was very unstable. Like, you didn't get very coherent videos when you would generate them. But a lot has happened in the last 6 months. I really think by the end of the year, we will be able to generate very consistent, very realistic, almost undetectable video. Like, you won't know that it's AI. There's a new tool that was just released. The white paper was released. They haven't released the tool, but it is eventually coming. You can Google this and you'll find it. Someone took an old picture of Albert Einstein and ran it through this software that's made by the creators of TikTok. I think it's called OmniHuman. And I don't know if they gave it an actual Einstein speech or they just found some audio. But they had one photo, uploaded this image, and he begins to talk, and he's using hand motions, and it's so real, like just like minute little details of the way muscular moves in your face and your throat moves when you talk and all. I mean, if you didn't know that it was AI, you wouldn't know that it was not video of Albert Einstein. Now, I think that's a double-edged sword. Because there are a lot of bad things you could do with that. Yeah. You know, there's one website that I go to that has all these really wonderful kind of fine-tuned, I mentioned the LARA idea where the low-ranking adaptation, you can train on a style. So like you feed it a bunch of Lego sculptures and then you take that particular thing with another piece of software and now it can sort of very realistically recreate Legos or Play-Doh or whatever. But on the same website, if you're not careful, there is a little switch that's the not safe for work button, which I leave turned off. If you turn it, I don't know if it's on or off. The filter is on,
yes.
But if you don't turn that on, there's a whole lot of people who've trained it on pornographic imagery and now have the ability to create ultra realistic, you know, various sex acts and things like that, body parts. You know, people are always going to use these things, distort and use them for nefarious purposes too. So I think of AI as a neutral tool. It's neither inherently good, nor is it inherently evil. But what we do with it could be very bad or could be very good.
Let me jump in here as a former pastor, and there's pastors listening to this thing. So let's talk a little more about this thing. What's the potential pitfalls then? And the ethical concerns that the church needs to be aware of if they're going to be integrating AI, and how can this be migrated effectively?
Yeah, there are a bunch of them that I write about in the book. I have a whole chapter on ethics. One, I think the biggest one for me, the one that scares me more than anything, is that while I am a fan of embracing the tools, I also think we have to exercise restraint. So I think a terrible practice would be a pastor going to ChatGPT and saying, hey, write me a sermon on tithing, and then taking that output and maybe bringing a couple things to it, but just preaching it as ChatGPT wrote it. There's a Pixar movie called WALL-E. I don't know if you've ever seen WALL-E, but the basic plot of the movie is humanity has polluted Earth to the point where they have to get on these big ships and go look for a new place to live. But there are robots, AI, all over the ship that are basically taking care of every need of the humans. And what ends up happening is the humans float around on carts and AI delivers food and clothing and takes them around the ship. And by the time they can come back to Earth because it's inhabitable again, they have completely lost the ability to walk. Their muscles are so atrophied that they can't even move anymore. My concern is that we as pastors, as church leaders, would almost treat ChatGPT like it's the Holy Spirit and go to it instead of going to scripture and doing our study and wrestling with the text. I'm a big fan of using AI once you've done that to help sharpen content, to give you illustrations, to help you understand context. But if you don't get that right, AI has no soul. You do have a soul. And if you don't bring enough of your soul to what you're doing with AI, then you're going to have soulless sermons and soulless Bible study and ministry and all that. So there's a, I think we have to sort of figure out what is our policy and what lines are we not going to cross. I do talk about in the book, I have a friend that works for Microsoft, and she's in quantum computing and AI. She helps write legislation for the government, but very high up. And she was telling me on a call that I did with her, I lead some AI cohorts, and she came on as a guest. And she said, at Microsoft, we have three buckets. Bucket number one is things that AI can do for us. And that, her example was, that is at a check-in station at the front desk. You know, you can walk up, AI can look at your face, scan your badge, and unlock the door for you. We don't necessarily have to have a human do that, sit at a desk all day and just check people in. There are things that AI can augment, second bucket. So it can help us with ideas. It can write, do some copy editing, you know, it can create an image for us or whatever. And then there's a third category, which is AI shouldn't touch some things. AI, it should be human only on certain things like HR and, you know, counseling and, you know, that's all those
performance review.
Yes. You know, all of that. So I think that every leader needs to begin to think about, when I think about ministry, what belongs in bucket one, what belongs in bucket two, and what belongs in bucket three. And if you haven't given that enough thought, you might be putting things in the wrong buckets or letting AI do things that it really shouldn't be doing, you know. So we've got to be really intentional. Again, embrace the tool, but restrain how you use it.
Good advice. Very good advice. We only got a couple minutes left. Steve, you got a quick question for Jason?
A quick question.
A quick one.
Sorry, I've been overly verbose today.
No, you've been, this has been excellent. It's excellent.
This is really good. So let's shift gears for just a minute back to your previous book, Both And, that talks about how to do streaming and have in-person hybrid experiences. And you had talked about taking some, I mean, some people probably referred to them as radical ideas, right? Like we recognize that people online have a short attention span. Let's put together content that is suited for that attention span. Those are some kind of things that are out there. Have you seen churches effectively taking some of these practices and putting them into practice with some good results?
Yeah. You know, I have seen some churches do things like whittle down sort of after Sunday their message to more of a podcast type format where it's maybe 20 minutes or so. So they don't include every single thing. One church that I worked with decided that they were going to, instead of calling it a series online, and I think I might even wrote about them in the book, they're going to call it seasons and episodes. So a series is now a season. So it's like, you know, six episodes in the season rather than six sermons in the series, because that language works a whole lot better for the outsider than it does the insider. Think about it, a series, if you're watching Netflix, is the whole show. It's, you know, Stranger Things is a series. And then they have a season, and that's 10 episodes or whatever. So what I think could happen when you do that, when you repurpose your material and think of it as this is episode 3 of our season, I might find that first. And what happens if you like that? You want to go back and watch episode 1 and episode 2, right? So I've actually had some pastors tell me, when I moved to that kind of a format, we started to notice people were binge watching our series. Like they'd go back and they're not going to watch every single thing from the opening prelude to the closing music and the benediction and, you know, scripture, like all that. I think that's more of an experience for live viewers that are live streaming. But I do think that repurposing your content to make it a little more bite-sized is good. There's also a piece of software that I know is getting a lot of play with folks called Sermon Shots, where, you know, you can roll your sermon into there and it'll pull out little clips and put stuff on the bottom of it. And I mean, captions and stuff. And so I've been seeing a lot of people that are using software like that to pull out little clips and so on. Are you all doing things like that with your offerings as well?
Phil is grinning. We're having a webinar where Corey Aldrin's the CEO of Sermon Shots.
Yeah.
We have partnered with an integration of their tool with our streaming church staff. So
awesome.
Stay tuned for the webinar.
Corey's a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. We really like Corey, and for some reason he likes us. So
So that's a good plug for us to wrap this up with. The webinar is called The Integration. See, I don't have it in front of me here, and I always get that mixed up. But it's February 25th. It's 12 noon. And you go to webinar.streamingchurch.tv. Steve, what's the name of the webinar?
It's The Integration of Sermon Shots and Streamingchurch.tv. So that's what it's all about. We got to know each other a little better at a conference a while back and thought, how can we work together? And we thought, oh, you guys have a lot of, we being Streaming Church, we have years and years of video content, and they've got some great tools for turning them into clips. And so we've got things integrated so that now if you're a Streaming Church person, you can just go to Sermon Shots and choose your account on Streaming Church, and it'll bring in all your Media Vault items into your Sermon Shots screen. So we were excited working with those guys.
Absolutely.
We got a demo of it just yesterday that I hadn't seen before. So it's really cool.
Yeah. It's very powerful. And he does use some AI technology in Sermon Shots that will help you to identify clips and all sorts of things like that.
It's really slick. We really like it. So the book is called Jason's book. And the latest is called AI and the Church. And let me see now if I get this right. The Clear Guide for the Curious and Courageous.
Yes. You got it.
Got it finally right. I always screw up your titles for some reason. And it's just me. So look, you can sign up. You can find the book anywhere, right? Anywhere books are sold. Or as Mike has put on here, the website for the book is AI and the Church. Got to spell it out. AIAND, the Church, .AI. That's the domain or whatever you want to call that fancy thing. So it's AI and the Church, .AI. Look, Jason, you speak at churches. So maybe somebody would like to have you come speak at their church. Should they go to that website?
You can definitely contact me through that website. Also, if you want a free chapter from the book, it's probably the most practical chapter, 10 ways to use AI and the Church. All you do is drop your email in there. I'll also just put a plug in. I lead a 6-month cohort process where churches can sign up to be a part of this cohort. We meet once a month. We go over different aspects of AI. You get a one-on-one with me about AI, and you get 2 copies of my AI and the Church book. And it's really kind of a boot camp. So any church that wants to go a little deeper can also find information about that there as well.
Sounds good. And make sure you follow Jason Moore on Facebook, and you will be entertained as well as educated. And he's very transparent, as I said earlier, and we won't get into his transparency, but I like what he says. So anyhow, that's it for the podcast today. Jason, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate it very much. And we appreciate everybody else here, Steve, as well as Michael behind the scenes. And most of all, people watching or listening to this podcast. And if you want to subscribe to the Church Solutions podcast, that would be wonderful. Give us a rating. Let us know what you think. You can always reach us at streamingchurch.tv. We'd be happy to help you. My name is Phil Thompson. Please take care of yourself and each other. And we'll catch you again on another episode of the Church Solutions podcast.